Okay. Very good morning to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Okay, this morning chanting, we do a quick one. Okay, we just chant the salutation to the Buddha, the Thai tradition. Then after that, we chant Namo Tassa 3 times. We take refuge, then we stop. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sanghang Namami. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha. Buddhang Pujami. Dhammang Pujami. Sanghang Pujami. Okay, this morning we save some time to do some reflection. I would like to share with you a discourse. The Buddha called it the Anattalakkhana Sutta. The discourse on the characteristics of non-self or anatta. Under this Anattalakkhana Sutta, the Buddha actually proclaimed the sutta this way. He said all beings should take pain to understand the characteristics of anatta, which is empty nature or non-self, which provides meshless deliverance from self-belief and self-perception. So this one is very important. So I repeat. All beings should take pain to understand the characteristics of anatta, which is non-self and empty nature of existence, which provide meshless deliverance, means no other teaching can give rise to this style of understanding to deal with this self-belief. Meshless deliverance from self-belief and self-perception, which is Sakayaditi, self-delusion. As taught by the Supreme Buddha, the teaching is given so that those who meditate on experientiable realities may arrive at perfect comprehension of what the Buddha said. It is for the development of perfect understanding of this phenomena and for the investigation of all the defiled mind-mind moments. The consequence of this cultivation is total deliverance, so desirous of bringing this teaching forth with its great benefit. Let us now recite the sutta. So the sutta is in Pali, but I will read the translation. The Pali starts with Ewangme Sutang, thus have I heard. Bhagava Bharana Seyang Viharati Isipatena Megadai Tatrako Bhagava Panchavaje Bhikkhu Aman Desi. So I'll read you the translation. So this will help you listen attentively to develop the requisite wisdom. Thus have I heard, at one time the Blessed One was dwelling at Benares in the deer park of Isipatana. There he addressed a group of five ascetics. This sutta continue after the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. After the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, only Kandanya became a sotapan. But after the Buddha continued with this Anattalakkhana Sutta, all five become arahant. That's why it's very powerful sutta. So you listen. The Buddha said, form, bhikkhu, is not self or empty. If bhikkhu, form, were self, then form would not lead to affliction. And one might be able to say in regards to form, let my form be thus, let my form not be thus. But since bhikkhu, form is anatta, form therefore leads to affliction, and one is not able to say in regards to form, let my form be thus, let my form not be thus. Feeling is also anatta. If bhikkhu, feeling was self or the ego, feeling would not lead to affliction, and one might be able to say in regards to feeling, let my feeling be thus, let my feeling not be thus. But since bhikkhu, feeling is not self, feeling therefore leads to affliction, and one is not able to say in regards to feeling, let my feeling be thus, let my feeling not be thus. Then the same go for perception, the Buddha said. Perception is anatta. Again he repeat. Then mental formation or sankhara also are anatta. Then he explained in the same way why they are anatta, because they lead to suffering, lead to affliction. Then they continue until the last aggregate, consciousness. Consciousness is anatta. If bhikkhu, consciousness was self, atta, consciousness would not lead to affliction, and one might be able to say in regards to consciousness, let my consciousness be thus, let my consciousness not be thus. But since bhikkhu, consciousness is not self, consciousness therefore lead to affliction, and one is not able to say in regards to consciousness, let my consciousness be thus, let my consciousness not be thus. Then the Buddha continued, he said, what do you think, bhikkhu? Is form permanent or impermanent? So they reply, impermanent, Lord. Then the Buddha said, but is that which is impermanent painful or pleasurable? Because it's impermanent, isn't it? Whatever feeling that arises, no matter how pleasurable, it will change and it will become unpleasant or brings about affliction. So because of that, form is unsatisfactory because it's impermanent. Form is painful. Then the Buddha continued. But is it fit to consider that which is impermanent, painful, of a nature to change, as this is mine, I am this, this is myself? So all these are born of self-delusion. So when you see the impermanent characteristic within, then you realize that they bring about suffering, affliction. That's why it's not dependable. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can hold on to, cling on to, and grasp on to and say, this belongs to me, feeling is me. A better way to understand the aggregates are not you is from my own contemplation. I share with you. Physical body, physical form, and external form, they are brought into the mind through perception. And the first aspect of form, which is the physical form, if you were to reflect and contemplate, we will come to understand that this physical form without consciousness is only made of element, so it cannot be you. And this is a more penetrative way to understand it. Then the car and the driver analogy that I give you. The body is like a car vehicle to take you around, except it has the senses that can give rise to condition for mental consciousness or mind consciousness to arise. That's why the sense bases can make you conscious of what you see, conscious of what you hear, smell, taste, tactile, feel, and think. So that is about all the difference between the body and the car. The car don't have sense bases. But you can see the car is the car, the driver is the driver. So the driver and the car are two different entities. So what we are trying to develop is they are only element, can never be you. So form is non-self. Then when it comes to feeling, perception, sankara activity of mind and consciousness, you ask yourself, is feeling me? But the Buddha used the word, is feeling satisfactory? Or does it bring about pain? Is it pleasurable? Because feeling is impermanent, that's why it brings about pain finally. So it's not dependable. That's why the Buddha said, because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity, that's why it's not you. Then he said, it brings about affliction. That's why you cannot cling onto it, hold onto it, and grasp onto it. Otherwise, you will be afflicted. But a better way to penetrate it is, when I meditate, I realize feeling come and go, pleasant feeling come and go, unpleasant feeling come and go, neutral feeling come and go. If feeling come and go, means if feeling pass away, pleasant feeling or unpleasant feeling or neutral feeling, did I die? If I didn't die, means feeling is not me, true or not? Otherwise, when that feeling disappears, you also die with it, isn't it? And this is easier, more penetrative. That's why feeling is not you. Feeling is condition arising upon contact. Through your wrong view, you stir your mind and the feeling arises. Pleasant. And this is to allow you to see dependent origination, how you function as a human being following the dependent origination or dwelling. And this is more penetrative. Likewise for perception, perception come and go, you didn't die. Thought come and go, you didn't die. Sankara, mental state, everything. Then consciousness also arise and pass away, you didn't die. So how can they be you? But the inquiry is, if they are not you, then who are you? What are you? Then how does this five aggregate Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana arise in you? And this is how you inquire and penetrate. That's why through my own inquiry, meditative understanding, I came out with all these understanding before I even heard about the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. And I penetrated it through my understanding. So that's why this nature developed the understanding in a slightly different way. So it will help you. If you want to understand better, read this book, the green book, which I shared at the Thursday class. Who are you? What are you? This one is based on a direct transcript from the recording done during the Thursday meditation class dated 15 of May 2014, conducted at Brother Sui An's house. It explained everything there. So I will move on. So the Buddha repeat for the other aggregates of mind. From Rupa, he asks the monk, feeling is the same. What do you think, Bhikkhu? Is feeling permanent or impermanent? The Bhikkhu replied, impermanent, Lord. Where they meditate, they know it come and it go. So is that which is impermanent painful or pleasurable? So the answer, painful, Lord. Because everything, because it's impermanent, it will lead to pain or affliction. Then the Buddha said, so is it fit to consider that which is impermanent lead to affliction and painful with the nature to change as the self, as the I, as this is I, this is mine, this is I, this is me, and this can be mine. So all this become very clear. So the bhikkhu and the disciple, they reply, yeah, it is not right to consider it as atta. So the Buddha repeat for feeling, vedana, then perception, sanya, then sankhara, mental activity, information, and consciousness. Then after that, the Buddha continued under Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Wherefore, bhikkhu, whatever form there is, rupa, whether past, present, or future, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, whether it is far or near, all form, all rupa, should, by means of right understanding or wisdom, be seen as it really is. Thus, this is not me. This is not mine. This is not self, or a permanent unchanging entity that we can hold on to, cling on to, and grasp on to and say, this is me, this is I, therefore this can be mine. Then the Buddha continued with feeling same. Then he repeat for all the others, perception, sankhara, and consciousness. Then the Buddha continued, seeing all this, he said, bhikkhu, the wise disciple, the wise noble disciple, they become disenchanted with form, become disenchanted with feeling, becomes disenchanted with perception, become disenchanted with mental formation or sankhara, become disenchanted with consciousness. Becoming disenchanted, their passion fade away. With the fading of passion, the heart is liberated. With liberation, there comes understanding. It is liberated. And they know, destroy is birth. The holy life has been lived. Done is what had to be done. There will be no more becoming into any state of being. Thus spoke the Blessed One. Delighted, the group of five bhikkhu rejoiced in what the Lord Buddha had said. Moreover, while this discourse was being delivered, the mind of the five bhikkhu were free from defilement through non-clinging. All five became arahant. So So this is the end of the discourse on the characteristics of non-self and empty nature or anatta lakkhana sutta. So here you should pay attention to this particular statement. When you see clearly that the five aggregates of form and mind, they are impermanent, they bring about affliction, they are not dependable, it's not a permanent unchanging entity that you can hold on to, cling on to, and grasp onto and say, this is I, this is mine, or this is me, these are mine. Then you have already meditated through awareness, knowing that the five aggregates of form and mind are not self, not you. Through this understanding, you will not be deluded by this five aggregates of form and mind anymore. Understand? That's why the Buddha used the word, you become disenchanted with form. Actually, the true meaning is not this English word. This English word is still not so correct because it still carries a connotation of dislike, understand? You don't like form, you don't like feeling, you don't like perception, you don't like activity of mind, you don't like conscience. It's not like that one. The real meaning is, after you develop the wisdom and the penetrative understanding, you are not deluded by it, understand? When you are not deluded by it, you are not gullible anymore. So then it cannot come and stir your mind, delude you. Means it loses power over you. You don't have any disenchantment or dislike. The mind just understands them for what they are, and it cannot be deluded anymore. Then there is an understanding that it will not hold, it will not grasp, it will not get, but it will know how to use them. Understand? They are still useful because to live life you need the five aggregate of form and mind. That's why this karmically conditioned five aggregate of form and mind is useful. It's part of your karmic condition, form and mind, for you to use to live life. So fading away of desire or passion is quite correct. Means you lose that craving to hold on to them, to cling on to them, to grasp onto them, and to like before, get very excited over them. That delusion is gone. That's why it leads to the fading away of passion or desire. And the fading away through wisdom liberates the mind. That's how you become arahant and beyond. So this is a very important anatta lakkhana sutta. So you have to reflect, you have to contemplate. And at that time, the five ascetics, the moment they heard this, they awakened and they became arahant. So how many of you awaken now? Hey, don't play a fool. Very easy to awaken. Well, this sutta is very powerful. It's a very powerful sutta. So if you have time, you go back, reflect and contemplate into it. So I finished this, what they call Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Then the first sermon is also very important. I still got about 10 minutes. Maybe I share with you on the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, first sermon. Under the first sermon, those who have the Anandagiri book, you can turn to page 44. The discourse on setting in motion the wheel of Dhamma. This is the first teaching of the Tathagata or the Buddha on attaining the unassailed perfect enlightenment. Here in the perfect turning of the incomparable wheel of truth, inestimable, wherever it is expounded in the world. So this is the first turning of the Dhamma wheel where the Buddha came out to preach. That's why it's called Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. Dhammacakka is the wheel. Understand? So the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. Disclosed here are two extremes and the middle way, with the Four Noble Truths and the purified knowledge and vision pointed out by the Buddha, let us chant together this sutta proclaiming the supreme independent enlightenment that is widely renounced as the turning of the Dhamma wheel, the wheel of Dhamma for the first time. So as usual, it's in Pali, the Buddha chant. Ekang samaya, no sorry, before that is Ewang me sutang, thus have I heard. Then Ekang samayang bhagava varanasyang viharati isipatini maikade, then tatrako bhagava and all those things. So the meaning is, thus have I heard once when the Blessed One was staying in this deer park sanctuary at Isipatana near Benares, he spoke to the fire ascetic. There are two extreme bhikkhu that should not be followed by one who has gone for. The first extreme is sensual desire or sensual indulgence, which is low, vulgar, ignoble, coarse, and unprofitable. The other one is self-mortification, or self-torture, which is painful, ignoble, and unprofitable. Bhikkhu, by avoiding these two extremes, the Tathagata had realized the middle path, the middle way. That's why sometimes the Noble Eightfold Path is also called the middle path, which gives vision and understanding, which leads to calm, penetrative enlightenment to Nibbana. So these two extremes, the meaning is very deep. It is not only sensual indulgence and what they call self-mortification. This is the first part. The two extremes got another meaning, a deeper meaning. Later on, as you develop the wisdom, when you transcend duality, right and wrong, good and bad, when you develop the enlightenment factor of equanimity, then there is no more duality, no more division. Then that equanimity is the real middle way. That is the second level. Okay? But for cultivator, the first level is good enough so that you don't become gullible. You don't go and do all the foolish things. Then the Buddha continued, is it? It is just this Noble Eightfold Path, namely right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right samadhi. Truly bhikkhu, the middle way understood by the Tathagata, produces vision and knowledge and leads to calm, penetration, enlightenment to Nibbana. This bhikkhu is the Noble Truth of Dukkha. See, the first Noble Truth, the Buddha said. Birth is Dukkha. Old age, sickness and death is Dukkha. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, despair are Dukkha. To be with people whom you don't like is Dukkha. To be separated from your loved one and prized possession is also Dukkha. Not to get what one desire is also dukkha. In brief, the five aggregates of grasping, upadana kanda, is dukkha. This first Noble Truth proclamation talk about the realities of life and existence, the eight type of realities that living beings need to confront. If you don't develop the wisdom before that, it will lead to suffering, the Buddha said. So this first Noble Truth is not life is suffering. It tells you prevalence of suffering. Suffering is everywhere when you don't have the wisdom. But when you have the wisdom, suffering need not be. So this is a very clear distinction between what is being commonly wrongly perceived by Buddhists, a lot of Buddhists. The Buddha never teach life is suffering. Then the Buddha continued the second noble truth. He said, "This bhikkhu is the noble truth of the cause of suffering. Craving, which causes rebirth and is bound up with pleasure and lust, ever seeking fresh delight, now here, now there, namely craving for sense pleasure, craving for existence, and craving for non-existence. There are three types of craving. Craving is tanha. Sensual craving is kama tanha, K-A-M-A, kama tanha, kama essential. The other one is bhava tanha. Bhava tanha is craving for existence, to become, to be something. Then vibhava tanha is craving not to be. So these are the three types of craving that cause suffering. And behind craving is the ego, self-delusion, sakkayaditti. Then the Buddha said, "This is the noble truth of the cessation of dukkha." Then the Buddha said, "The complete cessation, giving up, abandoning of that craving, complete release from the craving, and complete detachment from it. This is possible for one who has the wisdom." So the Buddha said, "This third noble truth explained clearly, suffering need not be if you have the wisdom. Because enlightenment in the here and the now, Nibbana, can be realized. So this third noble truth is very powerful. It gives you hope. It gives you confidence in the Buddha." Then the Buddha didn't stop there. He go on. He said, "This bhikkhu is the noble truth of the way leading to the end of all suffering." He used the word not only this noble eightfold path, namely right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. With the understanding that this is the noble truth of dukkha, there arose in me, bhikkhu, vision, knowledge, insight, wisdom, light, or clarity, concerning things unknown before. With the understanding that this is the noble truth of dukkha, and this dukkha has to be understood, there arose in me, bhikkhu, vision, knowledge, insight, wisdom, clarity concerning things unknown before. This is the second turning, okay? Second turning of the first noble truth is this noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. So the second turning is very important. Then after that, the Buddha went on to the third turning. With the understanding that this noble truth of dukkha and this dukkha has been understood, there arose in me, bhikkhu, vision, knowledge, insight, wisdom, clarity concerning things unknown before. With the understanding that this is the noble truth of the cause of dukkha, there arose in me again all the understanding. So all these four noble truths, he turned it three times. First time he proclaimed it. That's why with the understanding, he developed the type of wisdom. First turning corresponds to Suttamaya Panya through hearing at that time. Second turning, the Buddha gave you an inquiry. This noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. Then you go and reflect, contemplate, and inquire deep into it to develop the understanding. That leads to second type of wisdom, Chintamaya Panya, but it's not in the text. Then the third one is, this noble truth of dukkha has already been understood, means you already enlightened. That's why this one is the third turning, Bhavanamaya Panya, wisdom born of meditative cultivation, bhavana. So all the four noble truths, he turned it three times. So likewise, the Buddha, under the second turning of the second noble truth, he said, with the understanding that the cause of suffering or dukkha and this cause of arising of dukkha has to be abandoned. So you have to abandon craving, which is the cause, the three types of craving through wisdom. Then the third turning is, this cause of arising of dukkha, which is craving, has already been abandoned. So it's the same. The only difference is the second turning. Yeah, the emphasis, the Buddha emphasized differently. First noble truth, the second turning is noble truth or dukkha is to be understood. Then second noble truth, second turning, craving is to be abandoned. Then the third noble truth, which is the realization of nibbana, the cessation of dukkha, under the second turning, is to be realized. You have to realize it, otherwise you cannot be an enlightened being. That's why nibbana is to be realized. Then the fourth noble truth, which is cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, second turning, the Buddha said, this Noble Eightfold Path is to be cultivated. Understanding not enough. Cultivated. You must put into practice. You must cultivate it. Yeah. So the second turning emphasis is all different. Then after that, the Buddha mentioned this. You listen. Eh? So long, bhikkhu, as my understanding and vision of the reality regarding the Four Noble Truths in its three turning and 12 mode was not fully clear to me, I did not declare to the world of spirit, demons, God, with his seeker and sages, celestial and human, the realization of the incomparable perfect enlightenment. But when bhikkhu, my understanding and vision of the reality regarding this Four Noble Truths in its three turning and 12 mode was fully clear to me, I declared to the world of spirit, demons and gods, with its seeker and sages, celestial and human, that I have fully understood the incomparable perfect enlightenment. Knowledge and vision arose. Unshakable is my deliverance. This is the last birth. There will be no more renewal of being. This one, a lot of people couldn't understand. They go and interpret as the Sammasambuddha after that life, no more, finish. Because he said, the Buddha said, this is the last birth. There will be no more renewal of being. Understand? This is the last birth for that form and mind. Understand? When you enter Parinibbana, it will not take rebirth. Understand? That is the meaning. Doesn't mean Sakyamuni's nature, if he choose to come back or what, he cannot take another form and mind. He can through his vow and other condition. But that segmented life, that Sakyamuni, Buddha, or Gautama at that life, that one don't take rebirth anymore. That form and mind, that one, that is the last birth. No more birth. In fact, all bodhisattva also like that. After that, they parinibbana. They don't take rebirth. So this is the part I want to share with you. Then after that, you go and read yourself. Because the moment he say that, Kondanya become a sotapan. Before he finish the what they call the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. This part maybe I need to share with you so that you can rejoice. Thus spoke the Blessed One, glad at heart, the group of five ascetics approved of the words of the Blessed One. At this exposition, as this discourse or sutta was proceeding, the spotless, immaculate vision of Dhamma appeared in Venerable Kondanya, and he knew everything that has the nature to arise has the nature to cease. Just like that, he became a sotapan. So now, how many of you have become sotapan? Then the other part is very good. When the Blessed One has set in motion the wheel of Dhamma, the earthbound devas proclaim with one voice, the incomparable wheel of Dhamma has been set in motion by the Blessed One in the deer park, Isipatana, near Benares, and no seekers, Brahmin, celestial being, demons, God, or any other beings in the world can stop it. See, last time all the demons, all the Mara, they tried to stop, but now he's a fully enlightened one, Sammasambuddha. So the first heaven being Chaku Maharaja, they actually proclaimed with one voice. They were so happy, all the earthbound devas. Having heard what the earthbound deva said, the deva of the four heavenly king, the four great heavenly king, proclaimed with one voice again, like what the earthbound deva proclaimed. Then it moved on from the four great king. This is the Maha, I don't know how to pronounce it, the four guardian devas of the first deva plane. After that, it went up to the 33 gods, or Tavatinsa. Then Yama, then after that, the Yama devas, devas of delight, proclaim with one voice. Then the next one is deva who delights in creating. Then after that, it went up to the Brahma heaven. So having heard what the devas who delight in the creation of others said, the Brahma god proclaimed in one voice the same. The incomparable wheel of Dhamma has been proclaimed and set in motion by the Blessed One in the deer park Isipatana near Benares. And no seeker, Brahmin, celestial being, demon god, or any other being in this world can stop it. Thus in a moment, an instant, a flash, word of the setting in motion of the wheel of Dhamma went forth up to the Brahma world, and the 10,000-fold universal system trembled and quacked and shocked, and a boundless sublime radiance surpassing the power of devas appeared on earth. Then the Blessed One made the utterance, "Truly, Kondanya had understood. Kondanya had understood." Thus it was the Venerable Kondanya got the name Anak Kondanya. Kondanya who understand. Thus end the discourse of this first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. Okay? So, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So now you can start your meditation. Okay, you all should rejoice. Because this is a very powerful sutta. I will let you all meditate. I will off the line. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.